The Economic Alliance presents the Gulf Coast Grow Show, recording from the Shell Studio, with your hosts, Jason Lee and Clint Aiken. Our mission is to highlight stakeholders and activities that drive the Houston Port Region's economy.
And welcome to the Gulf Coast Grow Show. I am without my co-host, Clint Aiken, today, but I'm here with the president of the Economic Alliance, Chad Burke, and I'm your host, Jason Lee. We are excited to kick off 2020. Now, our initial inaugural episode for this year was last week with Commissioner Adrian Garcia, and we did that because it just, you know, a guy like you, you know, you take 3 or 4 weeks off for the holidays, you're not really doing it, you know, it's just kidding. He's laughing. Fortunate enough to get you in today. We wanted to make sure we really kicked off the year, and I'm excited about his episode because he had some great things to say. We have a phenomenal lineup for guests here in the first quarter, but we wanted to kick off and talk about not only 2019, but 2020. Mm-hmm. And for our audience and for our viewers and for those individuals who aren't members and they don't consistently hear this, the Economic Alliance, our focus and the singular line of sight lies in economic development, mm-hmm. transportation, workforce development, mm-hmm. public policy, and then quality of life. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to steal your thunder, but I'm going to let you hit on each one of those today. And that's really what the topic of today's show is about. What happened in 19, mm-hmm. and what's the vision for 2020? So with that, I'll kind of guide the conversation, but I'm going to turn it over to you, and we'll fire things off talking about economic development. So again, Chad, why don't you tell us about 19 and 20 for economic development?
Sure. Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. And the list of items that we want to talk about today are listed in that order for a reason, right? The core of what we do, the mission of the Economic Alliance, is economic development. That means adding jobs and capital investment to this 12-city Southeast Harris County region, right? And so everything that we do should focus on either accomplishing and or supporting that mission, right? So the heart of what we do is always economic development. That manifests itself into what we call project work. So we work with companies to either expand in this region or to locate in this region. If you look at, just like a sales force, and a lot of times we could be considered a sales force for the region. We employ a lot of different strategies and techniques to make that go. But if you look at our pipeline of projects that we're working on, in this region, right now we have, going into 2020, we have 31 active projects that we're working on. Regina Lindsay, our VP of Economic Development, manages that. We enlist members from all fronts, from utilities to county, to state, to incentives, to local cities with permitting. We really do use all of our members to help bring the team together to make sure that we are garnering as many of those projects as we can. But that pipeline right now is 31 projects. It's about 3,000, a little over 3,000 direct jobs out of all 31 of those projects. And that total capital investment is $7.6 billion. And I mentioned this in one of our committee meetings this morning. That pipeline is our pulse on, our finger on the pulse of how this local economy is doing. Are we expanding? Are we contracting? How much new capital are we bringing to this region? And we track that year over year, month after month, for really the last 11 years that I've been here. And for the third year in a row, I can say 31 projects, 3,000 jobs, and $7.6 billion is the largest that pipeline has been. That's up from $6 billion, which it was at most of last year. It's a neat way to look at the strength of our economy. Now, looking back at 20, we try and put metrics on everything we do, right? If you can't track it, you can't improve it, right? So we look back at 2019, we had six projects that we helped on that were either wins. Five of them were wins, and one of them was what we call an assist, where it didn't create new jobs, but we worked actively with one of our partners in the chemical industry, Shell, on a large what they call their big block turnaround, and we helped with infrastructure. We connected them with Hectra. We worked on an enterprise zone project to help fund some of the things that they were doing there. So. Six total projects, 285 direct jobs, $3.6 billion in new capital investment over those six projects last year.
Wow.
So again, the largest year that we have ever had. And part of that is, like I mentioned, it's a direct reflection of the steel influx of capital investment into this region in the chemical industry. It's also a part of that equation is the growth in the reach of the economic development. The more projects that we get our hands on, the more we can help with, and the larger that those numbers will get. So part of that is just us as a as an organization bringing more and more people into the fold to help with you know the economic development mission. So. Moving into 2020, like I said, the pipeline is as large as we've ever seen it. We've made some goals and some projections there. I would be shocked if it's $3.6 billion again this year. Timing of the project, size of those projects is always going to kind of determine what happens. But it'll be another healthy year. And when you look back at the trajectory of the last 10 years of economic development wins in this region and the growth of the chemical industry, we're getting near the top of the bell curve. And then in 2023 and 2024, you should be able to recognize a slowing down of the large cap investment projects. But like I tell people, at that point, we will have gone almost 15 years through this expansion phase, and we'll have doubled our production capacity for this petrochemical complex along the Houston Ship Channel. So you fast forward from 2010 and 2011 to about 2024, 2025, we will have put a 2x in front of the amount of production and goods that go in and out of this region.
That's unbelievable.
And then at that point, I would predict that we would grow at the rate of global GDP, right? Because then we will have repositioned production assets to the Gulf Coast to take advantage of shale gas, of cheap, sustainable feedstocks. And now we will be producing product that the world consumes, made from here. So that's not a bad thing. Even though large cap investment may slow, we will still be in a good position as far as maintaining, turning these facilities around on a regular basis, operating them, and then moving all of that product in and out of this region. So it's you know, the future looks really good for us. Right. We recognize that we won't always have $2 and $3 billion a year in cap projects that we're working on, but we're going to be in a good, strong manufacturing economy for the long term.
Right. And, you know, I think the beauty of what you just described is when you, for example, I read the Wall Street Journal daily, and it's always describing the trends in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the in some instances, the exception to the rule. The indicators, everything doesn't always necessarily flow through to this particular hotbed of industry that's happening over here. You might hear things that are happening in the Midwest, across the East Coast, but it's not reflective of the great things that are happening over here. And I think a lot of people need to take grasp of that, right?
Yeah.
And take a piece of that. And while I'd like to take credit for with the podcast and all, I'm just kidding. No, but the honest appraisal is just the great work that's going in and the amount of jobs and opportunities that people are trying to bring into this location, mm-hmm. and the work that's being done in the port to get people and get items in and out of it and expand and diversify. I think that's been a critical thing for us.
Well, and you mentioned that. So one of the slides that I use in presentations when I'm talking to people about what's happening in this region is a capital investment in ports in the different regional sectors of the U.S. And the one that we're concerned with is Gulf Coast, right? For all of the ports in the U.S., public spend in ports over the last 4 years has been $22 billion. So that's the public money that has gone into capital projects around ports, public money. In the same time span, the private money that has gone into ports is $132 billion.
My God.
Okay, so you got 22 in public money, 132 in private. Of that $132 billion that's been spent on ports for the last 4 years, 122 of it, 90% of it, has been spent on the Gulf Coast. And that's directly related to what's happening in the oil and gas and in the petrochemical industry. The facilities to bring product, feedstock in, manufacture it, and then move it out, has that spend, that capital investment in private money along the Gulf Coast is just unprecedented. When you really look at what money gets spent and where it's being spent and how much of it is coming in from the private industry. So it gives you a sense when you talk about how are things nationally, how are things across all sectors of the economy. Our sector of the economy is it's a rifle shot, and it's in a different category than a lot of the rest of the nation, because it is contingent and really being driven by the long-term low-cost feedstock that come out of the Permian and our shale place. I'd say one other quick stat that is that's just staggering, right? 10 years ago, the U.S., and I'm pulling this straight from my head, so I'm going to try and write it down, make sure I've got it right. Yeah, so 10 years ago, the U.S. had 20... No, I'm messing it up. I don't get it. So basically, we have 10 times the oil reserve than we did 10 years ago. And I don't want to put a number onto it, but it's like 230 billion barrels equivalents that we have now. 10 years ago, it was 22.
Right.
Right. And that's what's just in the Permian versus what we had in all of the North America, all of U.S. 10 years ago.
That's unbelievable.
So, yeah, it's those type of dynamics that have really changed what we're doing here in the Gulf Coast. So,
and I think, but the critical component that I would reach out to our audience, especially those that aren't members or don't show up and don't come to don't participate or have their hands wrapped around the great information that's shared inside this organization or even with the show, is what you see is not necessarily what's taking place in your own backyard. And if you want to make an impact, you can do that by getting actively involved, with an organization like this, because you guys are out there doing the behind the scenes work. And we're going to talk a lot about that stuff, but all this stuff is brought and facilitated by your relationships and with these big companies. And so I think a lot of that gets left. You only get your snippet and you go, well, how do I make a difference? It's get out and go right down the road. You can make a difference. You just got to get involved and find out where you can plug in. So now let's shift gears for a second and talk about that, because I know transportation's, a big piece of that.
Yeah.
Talk to us about 19, what the progress was, and then where we're going in 20.
So the core of what we do is the economic development. To make ourselves competitive, we have to have these supporting initiatives: transportation, workforce policy, quality of life, and those are ever evolving. But with this type of growth, the infrastructure was not prepared for this type of growth, and nor can it handle that type of growth in that short of a window, right? So our transportation committee and that initiative works on road infrastructure. Right, we've identified and prioritized 31 projects for the region. We partner with all of our cities, with the industry in the form of ECMA, with the Port of Houston, with the county, and with TxDOT. Those projects now are being, that we've identified and worked with the county and with TxDOT, are now being engineered, funded, built. Whereas before this group really got together to motivate that, there wasn't somebody ringing the bell for this region. So that group's done a phenomenal job. I'll quote Quincy Allen, our former TxDOT regional director, who said, "Hey, Chad, before we got involved with this group, Highway 225 redevelopment was not on our radar." Well, fast forward 3 years. They just let the contract to do the planning, environmental, and linkage study for the Highway 225 connecting all the way into 146 on the east end and Barber's Cut Boulevard where the terminal is, and then connecting with 610 and the 610 Bridge and Highway 45 on the west end. That study Phase one will take at least a year. Phase two will take another year. But out of that study, over the next couple of years, will come recommendations and then engineering, and then we'll need to find funding, and then we'll redevelop Highway 225. That project incorporates any number, probably four or five, of the prioritized projects that we had brought to them. So the response from our partners has been fantastic. The ability to work with and engage folks like TxDOT and the county and the port on really taking care of what we need to take care of in the region has been really fun to watch. It's been really, really rewarding. And then secondly, when you talk about infrastructure and transportation, we can't go past that conversation without saying, well, right now, for 2020, the number one priority for this organization, for the Port Authority, for the oil and gas industry is working the project that will be to widen the Houston Ship Channel. Mm-hmm. That's really kind of job number one as we go through 2020. And we've got a nice timetable set out. We've got mile markers set out. Visiting up in D.C. in February, again in March, in early April with our group. We anticipate a chief's report from the Corps of Engineers on that widening project probably by May, the beginning of May. The WERDA bill, the Water Resources Development Act, is where we will get the approval for that widening project. And there's a lot that has gone into this, including a mega study by the Corps that's happened over the last 3 or 4 years. The culmination of that is this year. We have to widen that the ship channel to deconflict the size of the ships that go now. Technology and the expansion of the Panama Canal and our growth in oil and gas has literally caused a physical conflict when the ships are too big to pass in the right. Houston Ship Channel. And so we need to grow that infrastructure to meet the needs. Otherwise, we risk becoming non-competitive. Just like we do on the land with those projects and those road projects, the same thing happens in the water. If we are having 1 and 2 day delays moving product in and out, whether it's cargo in or crude out, whatever it might be, those companies will immediately begin to look for alternatives to save money and transportation costs. So
right.
We have to be competitive, and so it's a top priority for this region, this city, this county, to get that project done.
And people don't understand, or maybe they don't take into consideration, but there's been a lot of work that's gone into putting these big distribution centers over on the west side, on the north side of Houston, for a main reason, is to take things from our port into Houston and then out into the Midwest, which has not always been an option, but because of I-10 and the work that's going on,
yeah.
And then the infrastructure of getting roads that take us from one side of Houston to the other, and we can get trucks
Absolutely.
Out of these ports,
Absolutely.
That opens up a huge economic impact. So if you shut down the port, all that money that was spent to build that work out there becomes a problem, because worst case scenario is if the port wasn't working right, we'd be sitting on a whole bunch of real estate that could go and develop new distribution channels that now you got empty real estate.
You
got thousands and thousands of acres of land not being used because those places could be done for us to take stuff off the port into the Midwest.
Really interesting dynamic there, right. that the Port of Houston has done a fantastic job taking advantage of is that there were labor stoppages on the West Coast in the LA Long Beach that started 4 and 5 years ago. And at that time, we had zero imports from China through the Panama Canal to Houston. So when the conflicts began on the West Coast, the Port of Houston acted to fill that void, and companies began shipping through the Panama Canal up into the Gulf to Houston, and now to the point where our imports are greater than 50% of our container imports come via Panama Canal from Asia now. And that number was zero 5 years ago.
That's unbelievable.
So think about that.
Right.
And then what does that mean downstream for that distribution network? And those are some of those large warehouses
yep.
And that whole distribution system that begins to not only feed us the products in the Houston and Texas that we consume, but then allows the ability for those companies to use Houston as a distribution hub to get up into Mid-America.
Absolutely.
So it all flows together, and we have to have the infrastructure to meet that need to stay competitive.
Right.
And so it's a constant look ahead, and it's constantly working with our partners, whether it be it's someone like TxDOT or the Corps of Engineers or our state legislators or our federal legislators, to make sure that we're doing what's best for this regional economy. This regional economy, I'll throw this out there because not everybody knows this, the 2019 Martin study that came out that the Port of Houston did last year for the economic impact of this region. So the Port of Houston basically makes up 21% of the state's GDP. And that's a 25-mile stretch of the Houston Ship Channel that accounts for 20% or a fifth of the state's GDP. It's phenomenal what happens here, and a lot of people don't see it because they're not in it, like you said, you know. But when you kind of get your hands in this over here and begin to see how it all works together, it's just phenomenal. It's just phenomenal. But yeah, that's our infrastructure moving forward. Obviously, we're working our road projects, and then obviously priority number one this year is the widening of the Houston Ship Channel, what they call Project 11 at the Port of Houston.
Project 11.
Yep.
Fantastic. So with all this work and all this opportunity, there's a need for people.
Yep.
Right? And so I think that brings us to our third topic, which is workforce development.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
So our role in the workforce development is like a lot of things that we do. We partner with the people that can make things happen. We respond to industry and communities. Our petrochemical and maritime industry came to us several years ago and said, hey, we do need to push more people into these high demand, high salary jobs that support this economy. And so our role in this is to market the careers. We've been able to establish a phenomenal speakers bureau. Patty Bell is our director of workforce development. She heads that up and helps schedule what this year was over 100 events that she and the volunteer team went to.
Wow.
That touched over 11,000 people, mostly students, trying to find out what careers are available. And what we do is market those careers in a way that lays the path in front of them and then connects those dots so that they can get there and have people that are in those careers come and talk to the young people about it, and really just act as a push to push people into the pipeline, the training pipeline that really exists almost primarily with our community colleges that do a fantastic job, but any of the training organizations and partners that can get people up to speed and get them those jobs. So Patty does a fantastic job. She works with ECMA and the Petrochem Works Committee. Congratulations to Patty. They just asked her this year to chair that Petrochem Works Events Committee, which is really the kind of the umbrella that all of that work comes under.
Oh, wow.
Like I said, we want to work as close as we can with those partners to make sure that we're supporting them in a way that's effective and valuable and really being kind of boots on the ground work for workforce development.
And I think you just described ECMA, Petrochem Works, but I think the beauty of this region is that a lot of these tradespeople, the collective efforts from the industrial and the commercial side, whether it be contractors, everybody has the same issue.
And Petrochem Works includes both owners and contractors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's such a positive thing to see that maybe you're not going to find in every region, where people aren't so worried about, oh, it's just, well, let me protect my back. This is all of our backyard. And so you see a lot of work with you guys and Association of Builders and Contractors, along with ECMA, along with Petrochem Works. These are all people who've come together and pulled together to attack one centralized thing, which is let's get people into our craft schools.
Yeah. Right? And it's funny, I tell people this, you know, 10 years ago, people would talk about workforce development and workforce development. And I was like, what is this workforce development mumbo jumbo you guys are talking about? Because I didn't really understand what the deal was. over the last 10 years, I've been educated pretty thoroughly, and we've had a chance to see different models of workforce development around the country. We've worked with the U.S. Chamber. We've worked with Dream It, Do It, the National Manufacturers Association that we partner with. We've worked with Greater Houston Partnership. But I've seen models, you know, from the East Coast to the West Coast. I've never seen a group, an industry, an economic sector work so well together to put kind of the individual kind of selfishness to the side to say, hey, what's better for you is better for me, and we're going to work together and we're going to rise all the ships with this tide. So it's just been really fun to watch. You have great, great people in this space working on this. People, I don't want to start listing names, but just phenomenal, it's phenomenal people. Yeah.
McCarthy Building Companies. From the Museum of Fine Arts to terminals on the Houston Ship Channel, we understand the challenges and complexities you face when building here in the Gulf Coast region. As the oldest privately held national construction company, we have a clear focus on clients, community, and collaboration. Just to give you some context, our Houston-based business does 15 to 20 projects per year. We are employee-owned with over 2,000 employees throughout the U.S. and 250 in the Houston area. For more information on McCarthy Building Companies, please visit www.mccarthy.com.
So let's talk about public policy.
Yep. There you go. So I tell people this, public policy, if you play baseball and you go to a different field, every field has its ground rules, right? You know, if the ball bounces and hits the this pole, it's in. If it hits that pole, it's out. So policy sets the ground rules for our businesses to be able to do business and make money in this region, and that's what we're all about. The more successful businesses are, the more people that they can hire, the more taxes they pay into our governmental entities, the more quality of life that they can provide for our citizens. So policy at the local, county, state, and federal level all have to be adhered to. We really have to pay attention to that and make sure that we are working those issues in a way that allow our companies to be prosperous, right? 2019, obviously a state legislative year. Our policy committee engaged full force. We created our white paper. We took that up to Austin, I think no less than five or six visits to Austin. We were some of the initiatives that we had on our white paper that I'm really proud of, the chapter 312 agreement, which is a state incentive for cities and counties to be able to offer incentives to companies to draw them into this region. That was a state program that was reauthorized in 2019. Our next session in 2021, we'll have the one called Chapter 313, which is with our school districts. And it's one of our most powerful tools, so we'll be back up fighting for that. Another issue that was workforce development related that came out of our policy group. In fact, our vice chair, Darcy Durham with Boeing, brought this to our attention. And that was a bill loosely called Deploy to Employ. But basically what it is a reciprocity agreement between states for the family members of military when they move from state to state.
Oh, wow.
So say your wife is a hairdresser or a teacher or something that requires a state certificate to be able to practice that in your state. The state of Texas passed the law, I think it's House Bill 2214, that said if you come into our state and you're active military and your family or spouse has come with you and has that certificate, well, you can get that job and go to work immediately, and we'll honor that certificate from the other state while you go through the process to get your Texas. So that there's not a 6-month gap or
That's
a 3-month
huge.
Gap.
Right.
And we put that workforce to work immediately, and at the same time we support our military family. So hugely happy that got passed. State Representative Ana Hernandez wrote that bill up for us and worked that through the House, and then Senator Carol Alvarado helped us out on the Senate side. So just, I mean, that's local. That's a local policy committee working with our local legislators to get a bill passed and put into law that really hits the ground and helps our families and helps our economy. So that was rewarding for us to see that happen. Same thing on the federal level. Each year in the spring, we will go to D.C. We'll work that white paper up. We're working that up right now. Our 2020 trip to Washington, D.C., last year we had over 30 people go with us. I anticipate something very similar. We'll have 30 to 35 meetings across 2 days with all of our legislators, those on the specific committees that we need to address specific bills with, our national associations and groups, whether it's the Corps or whether it's the American Chemistry Council or AFPM, we will meet with all of those groups while we're up there to make sure that we are advancing the causes on the specific issues that we've identified. That trip this year happens in late March, March 28th through April 2nd, kind of that last week of March in the first week, part of the 1st of April. It's going to be another really good trip this year.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You guys are looking for sponsors for that?
We do. We rely on our members to help sponsor that trip for our staff and to make all of that happen. And then we have two really nice events when we're there. One is an orientation dinner that brings everybody together. We'll bring some special speakers in the first night that we're there and give everybody kind of an orientation of what we're going to be doing and all of the ins and outs and some inside information or inside baseball information on what's happening in D.C. And then the second night that we're there on Tuesday night, we will invite our local contingent of legislators to dinner with us. And that's always a lot of fun, too.
Nice.
We get good participation with that. And we look for sponsors for those types of things. It's a chance for our companies and members to step up and get a little recognition and help support the cause.
Amen. That's yeah. I love to see it. So, and then last but not least, quality of life.
Yeah, and that's the piece of the puzzle that works with our public cities and communities and chambers of commerce. How that fits into economic development is, if you've got all these great jobs, but you don't have communities where people can raise their families and enjoy their time and educate their children that are close by, it becomes harder and harder to recruit people into your industry. If the average drive is an hour, hour and a half to get across Houston to go to work on the Houston Ship Channel, it makes it that much harder for the companies in this region to be able to fill that workforce. So what we do is we work with those cities to promote them, to work on beautification projects, to work on quality of life projects, just to help make this region not only the most powerful economic engine in the state, but also a great place to live and work, short commute, great communities, good schools, parks, entertainment options, those types of things we want to support to make this area the best we can. The vehicle that we have used in 2019 that has really done a great job, and I'm looking forward to 20, is our matching grant program. Our historic district has funds available. It's a 501c3. We have applications that communities can fill out for anything that falls under the topic or heading of quality of life. So in 2019, we approved a grant for the city of Pearland to restore a historic train station as part of their history and part of a beautification and parks project. We also approved for the city of Galena Park an early warning system matching grant for $15,000 to help them upgrade their system of early warning systems, right? To in case we do have an incident in this region, now they soon will be able to warn their citizens and get that information out. Another one that with the board just approved was with Commissioner Garcia, Harris County Precinct 2 Commissioner, has really kind of sponsored a really good reading program, supplying books to young children. The first step was in Goose Creek, and we're going to expand upon that. But it is a reading program that helps fund books to kids that don't have access to books, right? And so, especially in those critical ages, 3 to 6 years, 3 to 7 years old. And then we're also looking right now into 2020, working with County Commissioner Lena Hidalgo on the Imelda Relief Fund. Again, it's a chance to help fund a group that takes real dollars and puts it into the hands of those that were recently affected by Imelda, whether it's housing or transportation or even clothing and things like that. So it really reaches down and helps with quality of life issues.
Great.
In our region. So that kind of wraps it up, but that's a lot of good things going on in quality of life as well. So a little bit about what's been going on and a little bit about what's happening in 2020.
Well, and I want to, this is a great time to, as we get ready to wrap up, to call out the audience that perhaps you're not actively involved with the Economic Alliance. Perhaps you live a little removed, but you have an interest in learning and understanding more about what's happening. That's the design and purpose of the show. It's the design and purpose of the organization is to be an advocate for all of these things. And I think as we wake up every day and we get in our cars and we show up at our jobs and we work and then we toil and then we come home and we look at the food in our grocery store, we do all these things, and then we go home and watch the news and it's international or it's national news, and we lose sight that there's a significant level of impact of things that really matter to those items that you get off the shelf, the cost of those items. Sure. On the shelf, the traffic jam that you're sitting in, you know. Mm-hmm. Understanding and knowing that traffic jam in 2 years is going to allow however many millions of dollars worth of material to move back through it, so that you can have more money in your schools and your kids get a better education. I mean, you know, maybe it doesn't make the traffic less bearable.
Yeah.
But at least you understand.
Yeah. What's the going knowledge, on. The knowledge of why that's happening and what you need. I mean, I used to tell my kids, you have to do the hard thing to get to the good thing, right? The hard thing for us right now is this growth, right?
Right.
With great growth comes some growing pains, right?
Right.
In every sector, whether it's workforce or whether it's infrastructure, you know, you've got to be able to move with that and address that and sure. That's why they call it growing pains. I would rather have growing pains than the other side of that equation. You know,
right.
I'd rather be dealing with, we need more capacity than, well, we don't have any jobs. And then that's a hard equation at that point.
Well, and with that being said, as we look to wrap up the show, I want to thank you. And I know you had a very successful career, a couple of awards under your belt, and some phenomenal things that happened. But the organization continues to do great things. We look forward to 2020, and I'd like to just, again, a passionate plea to the audience. As you get out there and share the story of industry, the story of the Gulf Coast region, the easiest thing to do, if you can't get down here on a regular basis, is you can tune in weekly. You can also go to the website. You can go to the LinkedIn pages, and you can get everything that we just described is being delivered on a weekly basis.
Absolutely.
To you in our channels, our YouTube podcast channel, Spotify, so you can go find our show.
Yeah, I have to interrupt you and say that this, and Jason, you brought this to us. It's a phenomenal idea. It has grown. Thank you again to Shell for sponsoring the studio. But this helps spread that message of what's happening in this region. Thank you so much to you and Clint and Caitlin, who manages this. This is the extension of what we're doing. This is spreading the word about what's going on in this region. And the better we do that, the better people understand and can access and really move things quicker, grease the skids, as I like to say. So
absolutely.
It's a great thing that you're doing for us. We really appreciate it. It's the information, like you said, on this podcast that's captured. I think we had 30 podcasts last year, right?
30 podcasts.
So the information that's been captured and the people that you get to see we're an organization full of doers. Mm-hmm. You're a doer. This is a great way to really understand what's happening in one of the most dynamic regions of the state.
Fantastic. So stay tuned this season, because we've got legislators coming on, congressmen, all types of individuals from every different walk, guys who work and operate in the plants. So there's a huge lineup of just superstars who we're bringing onto the show, to stay tuned to the great things that are happening in 2020. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks.